Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter 10. We'll start with text 42. There's a number of verses without purports. So we'll be reading several verses this morning. But we might as well chant this one. Satana patatas sakras. Satana patatas sakras. Tabad bishigravikrama. Tava bhisigravikrama. Chicheda nisitar balar. Chicheda nisitar balar. Asampratan hasaniva. Asampratan hasaniva. Satana patata suchak sakras. Tavadisa gravikrama. Chicheda nisitar balar. Asapratam hasaniva. Others. Vaishnavis. Sa, he, Indra, tan, arrows, apatata, while moving toward him and falling down. Sakra, Indra, Tavadbi, immediately, Sigra Vikrama was practiced to oppress very soon. Chicheda, cut to pieces. Nisitai, very sharp. Balai, with another type of arrow. Asampratan, the enemy's arrows not being received. Hasan Iva, as if smiling. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada's translation. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who is expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counterattacked the arrows with arrows of another type, known as Bala, which are extremely sharp. So just to refresh everybody's memory, what's happening here is the demons were tricked. Mohini Murti gave all the nectar to the demigods, and now the demons have, you know, realized, hey, we were tricked, and they're very upset about the whole thing, and they started attacking the demigods, so now there's a fight. And basically at this point, Indra and Balimar are just squaring off, and they're about to go at it, fight with each other. So, as I said, there's no purport, and I'll read a bunch of translations and then a purport. Tasya karmo tamam viksha dormarsha saktim adabe tam jvalantim mahol kaban hasita shtam achina dadi. Translation. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon, known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Tata sulam tata prasan tata tomaram rishtaya yadyachastram samadadyat sarvam tat achinad dibu. Translation. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasa, tomada, ristas, and other weapons. But whatever weapons he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. Sasarjasta surimayam antardanagato sura tatapradur babuchalai suraniko pariprabhu. Translation. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. Tato ni petus tadavo dayamana davagnina shila santanka shikaras churnayantyo dvisad balam. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire, chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigods. Okay, so here's the first interesting point here that we can bring up. It said in the previous shloka that Bali Maharaj disappeared and he resorted to demoniac illusions, and a great mountain was generated from illusion. So we generally tend to think of an illusion as something insubstantial, like a mirage, hallucination, or an apparition. So, but here, this illusion we're hearing in the next text, the result of coming in contact with this illusion was that the demigods, their heads were smashed. You know, these sharp-edged stones, which were like picks, fell, and they smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. So one can consider what kind of illusion is really being referred to. This is doesn't sound very insubstantial. It sounds pretty substantial. It's smashing the heads of the demigods. Okay, reading on. And somebody at the end of class, if they like, that's my question to the audience. If somebody would like to, at the end of the class, have a go at explaining what kind of illusion this is, that it's smashing the heads of the demigods. Mahora guys, samut petor danda suka savrikshika simha vyagra varatascha maradayanto mahagaja. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigods, crushing everything. So once again, very substantial. Yatudanyas chasastasa sulahasta vivasasa chindi binditi vadinyas tatarakshu ganaprabho. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierce them. Tato mahagana vyomi gambirda parusha svana angaram mumuchur vatar ahata stanayit nava. Fierce clouds harassed by strong winds then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder. They began to shower like live coals. Sustudaityanas sumahan vani svasana sarati samvartaka ivat yugro vibhuda vajinim adhak. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartika fire, which appears at the time of dissolution. Tata samudra udvela sarvata pratyadrishyata prachandavatar udhata tarangavarta bishana. Thereafter whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. Evam daichar mahamayar alakshya gatibi rane sridjamanasu mayasu visedu sorashanika. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. Natat prati bidhim yatra vidur indra dayo nirpa vyata pradur rabutatra bhagavan vishvabhavana. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. So, once again, there's no purport to this verse, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to borrow a purport from another place in the Bhagavatam, because if we remember, there's another pastime that we've, in the last few months, we've gone over, which is a little bit similar to this. Actually, it's a lot similar to this. And aside from Prabhupada disciples, can anybody remember a pastime that's a few cantos back, which bears a lot of resemblance to this particular section of the Bhagavatam, what we're hearing right now? Actually, I said no Prabhupada disciples, because I know Archita, when I was asking him a question about this, I think it was yesterday morning, he got it right away, came to his mind right away. Does anything come to anybody's mind? Who is in a similar situation to what the demigods are in now, back a few cantos ago? No. Oh, how so? The situation being that here's the demigods, okay, and they're fighting, and all of a sudden they're being overwhelmed by the mystic powers, the very mysterious mystic powers of the demons. So who is in a similar situation to that back a few cantos ago? Yeah, Dhruva Maharaj. Do you remember any more details? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dhruva Maharaj was fighting against the Yakshas, and he just he returned home, and the circumstances were his brother went out hunting, I believe. His brother's name was Uttama, and he was killed by a powerful Yaksha. And Dhruva Maharaj was very disturbed by that. And Prabhupada says in his purport that that was appropriate because he was a Kshatriya, and this was like his brother was killed in a very unceremonious way, unnecessarily. So he went to get revenge. So he went to the city of Alakapuri, I believe, which is the capital city of the Yakshas. Kuvera is the head Yaksha. And he was attacking the Yakshas, and they were 130,000 strong in number, and they came out and they were fighting, and they were very impressed by Dhruva Maharaj's prowess. Anyway, he was defeating them all, and it appeared as if he had defeated them all. You see? And he was thinking, okay, now I'm going to proceed into the city of Alakapuri, after having defeated all these armies that were I was confronting. But then it mentions in the Bhagavatam, he thought to himself, but wait a second, this is a little too good to be true. I'm not sure about this. These Yakshas are very tricky, and I wouldn't be surprised if they still have a few more tricks up their sleeve, and I shouldn't get complacent. And sure enough, he was right. Pretty much, at the very next moment, all of a sudden, something similar to what is being described here started appearing before Dhruva Maharaj. And, it was very impressive. I mean, once again, the Yakshas, like the Bali Maharaj and the demons here, and they're very expert, as Prabhupada mentioned, in these mystic powers. And Dhruva Maharaj was, at least for all apparent purposes, was being overcome by these quote-unquote illusions, very substantial illusions that the Yakshas were kind of throwing at him, so to speak. And so he did something similar. Does anybody remember what he did? Or does anybody remember what happened to him? How he kind of got out of that dangerous situation? Anybody remember? Okay, it doesn't mention that specifically. He had a little extra help. Does anybody remember what happened? Oh, take Prabhupada disciples included now. Well, what happened was the sages communicated with him, and it doesn't specifically mention that he did the demigods and just started meditating on Vishnu, but the sages meditated, and this is the statement that the sages made. I don't know if it was like from a voice from the sky or exactly, it doesn't give a lot of details, but this was the communication from the sages. Dear Dhruva, O son of King Uttanapada, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Sarangadanda, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus, a devotee is saved. So, same basic principle here. Take shelter of Krishna. The demigods here, they did it without being instructed. They just did it intuitively or instinctively. They, as I said here, they wholeheartedly meditated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And interesting enough to note, what happened is Krishna appeared. It says the creator of the universe then immediately appeared. So, we hear a lot of things about the demigods. Ah, the demigods, they're just Sakama devotees, demigods, they're not. But anyway, they're good enough devotees so that when they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he immediately appeared. So that's pretty good. That speaks pretty well for them. So that was their situation. Here, Dhruva Maharaj, he's instructed by the sages to take shelter of the Lord as in the form of the chanting of the holy name, which the sages are pointing out to him is as powerful as the Lord himself. Identical. As powerful is just another way of saying identical. Is that verse, Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Nitya Puna Shuddha Nitya Mukta Binatvam Naminamino, that the holy name is identical with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. No difference at all whatsoever. The only difference is within our consciousness. So he's recommended here to take shelter of the holy name of the Lord, which is as powerful as the Lord himself. And the sages go on to say, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus a devotee is saved. So, should read Prabhupada's purport to this that particular verse, since it's kind of very similar. Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I printed it out. It's the last verse of the chapter where Dhruva Maharaj fights with the Yakshas. All the sages said, if you can find it. But should I start reading? Okay. The great rishis approached Dhruva Maharaj at a time when his mind was very perplexed due to the magical feasts exhibited by the Yakshas. A devotee is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his, capital H, by his inspiration only, the sages came to encourage Dhruva Maharaj. In other words, by Krishna's inspiration, the sages came to encourage Dhruva Maharaj and assure him that there was no danger because he was a soul fully surrendered to the Supreme Lord. By the grace of the Lord, if a devotee, at the time of death, can simply chant his holy name, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Simply by chanting this Maha Mantra, he immediately surpasses the great ocean of the material sky and enters the spiritual sky. He never has to come back for repetition of birth and death. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can surpass the ocean of death. So Dhruva Maharaj was certainly able to surpass the illusory magical fears of the Yakshas, which for the time being disturbed his mind. And the first text of the next chapter also deals with this same thing, and I'll read the purport to that too. Dhruva Maharaj was given a specific arrow made by Lord Narayan himself, and he now fixed it upon his bow to finish the illusory atmosphere created by the Yakshas. As it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.14, Mameviye papajante mayami tam tadantite. Without Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one is able to overcome the action of the illusory energy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also given us a nice weapon for this age, as stated in the Bhagavatam, Sangopangastra. In this age, the Narayan Astra, or the weapon to drive away Maya, is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in pursuance of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, such as Advaita Prabhu and Nityananda Gadadhar and Srivas. So that's a very nice instruction for us. In other words, so next time you find yourself in a situation like this, like Dhruva Maharaj is in, or the demigods are in, you can take shelter of the holy name and be saved and actually and drive away the Maya. And of course, the next time is the next moment, because we're always in that situation, whether we know it or not. So we always should be taking shelter of the holy name as the weapon to drive away Maya. And another point is that the sages are mentioning here that they say many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty, you know, by taking shelter of the chanting of the holy name. So, needless to say, of course, that's true. And the thing is, though, for us, okay, but, you know, we want to be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. But in the meantime, you know, we want a lot of other stuff, too. In other words, it's not like, okay, I'm just going to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and I'll be fully protected from the fierce death without difficulty, and that's it. Now let me go, you know, take rest. No. Between now and that time, we certainly want that. But between now and that time, we want to do something. You know, we want to do something. So in other words, what I'm suggesting is devotees should take shelter of the holy name of the Lord, not only to be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty, which undoubtedly they will, you know, experience, will happen, but also to be, you know, empowered or used as an instrument to do something and to push on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. You know, like now while we're alive, let's do something, right? So the process for becoming able to do something is the same. It's taking shelter of the holy name, which is identical, as powerful, as we just heard the sages say, identical with Krishna. And in this way, you know, by sincerely taking shelter of the holy name, as it mentioned in that, in pursuance of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, Dvaitacharya, Nityananda, Gadadhara, and Srivas, we hopefully we can become used as instruments to do something. And we could see that that's, you know, it's already happened. It's already happened. I mean, in our movement already, there's devotees. We had Navi Yogendra Maharaj just left this morning, but there's so many devotees. I mean, you know, like I don't want to say countless, but there's a lot of devotees who have already, they've done that. They've made that. That's been their life's program. They've sincerely, seriously dedicated their lives towards following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and trying to assist Srila Prabhupada to, you know, push on the Sankirtan movement. And we're very fortunate to have their association. We're very fortunate to hear the instructions, you know, that they give us when they come and have such an amazing, wonderful example. And we should try to follow in their footsteps. You know, each one of us, you know, especially, as I said, each one of us, but particularly the newer devotees, younger devotees, should be thinking like that. I have to, you know, this is what I'm trying to do. I want to follow in the footsteps of these disciples of Srila Prabhupada who have set such a good example and have done exactly what Prabhupada wanted them to do. And this is the process, you know, by seriously taking shelter of the holy names, or basically, that's one specific thing, or in general, the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, instructions of the spiritual master. And one will be able to do that. You know, one will become, get that mercy. And be, you know, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, predecessor Charas will use us as an instrument to do something, you know, to spread the Sankirtan movement. And then at the end of our life also, we'll be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. So it's like a, you know, perfect life. Such a Narayan Prabhu, just before, maybe you saw, just before I was coming to give class, he was mentioning to me that next week or in the next few days, in the very near future, there's going to be the first ever yoga festival in Beirut, Lebanon. And at that yoga festival in Beirut, Lebanon, Prabhupada's books are going to be there in the Arabic language. So in other words, miracles do happen. You know, sometimes, you know, miracles do happen. That's a miracle. Just stop and think about it. You know, Prabhupada's books in the Arabic language in these countries, you know, I went to one Arabic country back like 20-something years ago, Malaysia, and it's very repressive. You know, it's not Arabic, but okay, it's not even an Arabic country. Malaysia's not even an Arabic, he's right, it's not even an Arabic country, but there's a lot of very strong Islamic influence there, so much so that, you know, you have to be very careful about who you preach to. It was like a crime to try to preach to somebody who is of the Islamic faith, trying to influence them to become a devotee. You know, you could preach to the Chinese people, you could preach to the Malays like that, but if you preach to somebody who's from already part of the Islamic faith, you get in a lot of trouble. And that's as Prajita just corrected me. Nice, thank you. It's not an Islamic, you know, Muslim country, but it's a very touchy situation. So here we are, you know, the Prabhupada's books are in the Arabic language in Beirut, and not only that, think of what's going on there. You know, the country's in a state of civil war practically, and there's all this new terrorist group that's up, you know, rising and becoming more powerful, ISIS. So once again, miracles do happen. You know, so we should, try to be very sincere, and you know, Lord Chaitanya will allow us. He'll, you know, give us a piece of the action, so to speak. There's that nice verse in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's speaking to Arjuna, and after Arjuna asks that question, you see, after seeing the universal form, Arjuna asks the question, "Who are you, Lord? You know, I can't understand you," and like that. And Krishna, you know, tells him, he says, "Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. I've come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. Therefore, get up and prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies, and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, Savisachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Drona, Bhishma, Jayadratha, Karna, and other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore, kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight, and you will vanquish your enemies in battle. So in the first line of the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says, every plan is made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is so kind and merciful to his devotees that he wants to give the credit to his devotees who carry out his plan according to his desire. See? So that's what Krishna wants to do. So we should cooperate. You know, Krishna wants to work through his devotees. So if the Lord wants to work through his devotees, then our mood should be, okay, here I am. You know, I'm ready. What do you want me to do? But we have to qualify ourselves for that. And the way we qualify ourselves for that is by, you know, serious sadhana, being serious followers like that. Then Krishna will see, yeah, I can use this person. I'll use this person as an instrument. That was Arjuna's qualification, that he was, you know, fully surrendered, pure devotee. So Krishna used him, as made him the hero of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Although Krishna really ultimately was responsible for the victory, he wanted to, you know, give the credit to Arjuna. He wanted Arjuna to be seen or go down in history as the hero. So that's there. Okay, I'll just make one last point because I'm just seeing the clock. It's already quarter past eight. Time flies. But so anyway, we should try for that. And even if we're, you know, there's no... Being engaged in Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement is absolutely, it's a win-win situation. You know, if we surrender and if we're fortunate enough to you know, be used as an instrument by our spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, predecessor, Charles, etc., you know, to push on the Sankirtan movement, wonderful. And even if we're not fully successful, still, you know, we're not losers. We're not left holding the bag, so to speak. We're not left like, oh boy, I've made all this effort, and what do I got to show for it? Nothing. I didn't pursue material life, so I'm nowheres materially, and I've been unsuccessful spiritually. So, you know, I've, like Arjuna said, I'm like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere. No, you know, when he said that, Arjuna said that, but Krishna's response was, nope, that's not how it works. You know, I can't remember to quote the verses, but this is one, like a few sentences from one purport in the Bhagavad Gita to chapter 6, text 40, where Krishna's responding to Arjuna's doubt. Prabhupada says, because auspicious Krishna consciousness is never forgotten by Krishna. That's the way I understood it, and Archita understood it when we were discussing it. Because auspicious Krishna consciousness is never forgotten, and one so engaged will continue to be so, even if he is low born in the next life. So even if somebody's not able to be completely successful in their attempt to surrender and become a pure devotee, and you know, even if they engage in some activities which unfortunately bring reactions to them that cause them to take, you know, a low birth in their next lifetime, but Prabhupada says here, he says, the devotional service you perform will never be forgotten, and one so engaged will continue to be so even if he's low-born in the next lifetime. So, I mean, worst-case scenario is we'll be low-born in our next lifetime, but we'll come in contact with the devotees again. We'll get another opportunity to continue our devotional service from where we left off, right? So that's, at least for me, be honest with you, when I think like that sometimes, that makes me feel good to know that at least I'm going to get another opportunity in my next life not to take up from where I left off, regardless of my material circumstances. And another thing, gives me some solace when I'm thinking about how I'm not as successful as ideally what I'd like to be. This is a couple sentences from the Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, text 19, where Prabhupada also talks about this, you know, phenomenon of an unsuccessful devotee. It says, Prabhupada says, a karmi suffers the results of his own fruitive reaction, where a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. The suffering of an orphan and the suffering of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to care for him. But a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. So that's another thing. I like to meditate on that, you know, even if things, and anybody can meditate on that, even if things are a little difficult, we're not, you know, experiencing some difficulties in devotional service, it's not just sentiment. You can, how would you say, encourage yourself by remembering that, okay, what's happening is you're being reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. And it's not like you're just suffering pointlessly. Whatever you're experiencing, it's been directly, you know, engineered by Krishna. It's to reform you. You're being reformed by chastisement directed by Lord Himself. Prabhupada says, a beloved son of a rich man is always under the vigilance of his capable father. So in other words, even devotees are always you're part of Krishna's family. When you make that decision, when you decide, now I'm gonna surrender, I'm gonna come forward, I'm gonna ado shraddha tato sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya anartan. When you come and make that choice, okay, I have faith in this, I'm gonna come forward, I'm gonna associate, I'm gonna take up the process. See? Then Krishna takes your file from the thing and puts it on his desk. You're part of you're moving into an inner circle. And from that point onwards, you're being looked after by, the Daivi Shakti. You're part of you're moving in, as I said, to an inner circle, and Krishna's looking after you. That's the way I understand this statement. You're part of, Krishna's spiritual family. Well, we're all part of Krishna's spiritual family, but when you make that decision to try to surrender and you come forward, and you get special attention. And in Bhagavad Gita, there's that famous verse where Krishna says, Shipram bhavati dharma ma shashvat shantim lagachati kuntaya pratijani name bhakti pranashati. My devotee never perishes. He tells Arjuna that, even if the devotee has some difficulty and, strays from the ideal path, deviates from the ideal path, that he quickly becomes righteous and attains everlasting peace. My devotee never perishes. And as Krishna is looking after us. So it's a win-win situation. That was the original point I was making. It's win-win, Even if we're not completely successful, still, we're going to get a chance to come in contact, take up devotional service again from where we left off. And in the meantime, we could be thinking that, okay, whatever's happening to me, this is being done to me by Krishna. I'm not like the orphan. I'm like the beloved son of the rich man. That, as I said, is soulless for me. And if we are successful, then the best case scenario is that even during this lifetime, Krishna will use us in some nice way, uses it as an instrument to help assist in the spreading of the Sankirtan movement. And at the end of this lifetime, as mentioned here, we'll go back to Godhead. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Shruti Karma Pu. No, I supplied the purport. I cheated. I supplied a purport from another part of the Bhagavatam where that was kind of like a similar type of, thing. So sorry about that. Such a Norpura. Well, are you giving class tomorrow? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu. I have a comment and a question.
Mm-hmm.
When you were mentioning about the comment, when you were mentioning about the Islamic, how difficult it is. I was remembering, because you mentioned Malaysia, that at one point I encountered a difficulty. I met someone who was not very happy when I was presenting the book. And he said, "Who's this Bhagavad Gita I have in hand? Who's this?" I say, "Is he God?" I say, "Yes." He says, "Wait a minute." He called his friend. His friend came. He says, "If you will distribute this book in my country, I will cut your neck." So anyway, besides that, I can say that there are also many wonderful people from that faith now, mm-hmm. fortunately, living here in this country, which is more liberal. And they're very nice, and they are open to understand more other traditions. I have met both. So it's worth it to always keep looking for that good souls there.
Yeah.
So my question now is that, you were mentioning about, the Bhagavatam mentions about the illusion. I also got stumbled when I met both things. I said, well, it's not an illusion because it becomes real.
Very substantial illusion, right?
Yeah, later on it becomes real because it's actually, rocks coming out and killing. So then it came to my mind a story from the Krishna book where the Lord himself is fighting. I think it's Salva.
Salva, yeah.
And then suddenly Salva manifests, creates some illusion of some family. I'm a family member of Krishna.
His
Krishna.
Father.
And
yeah,
then
here's
became,
your father. Now watch how I kill him.
Exactly. And then he actually, he apparently, he was overcome by this illusion. So now the question was, obviously we know it's a pastime. And, you know, the Lord has many energies, and one of the energies made that happen. So which energy is that one, and which energy is the other one?
Well, the one you were just referring to, I would just off the top of my head say that's more like Leela Shakti, you know, because that's Krishna there himself. Nobody, no illusion can bewilder Krishna. So that Leela Shakti energy, which we talked about in the last class, was allowing Krishna to be momentarily kind of like, whoa, how is it? Because you know, it says Krishna got emotional. You know, it was allowing that to happen to enhance the overall pastime. You know, but in this case, with you know the illusions created by the demons, which is, as I said, you know, very substantial illusions because they're breaking the heads and the backs and the bones of all and killing these different demigods. That I'm not sure, and that's why I said during the beginning of class. Remember, I said I'll throw this out as a question to the audience. Maybe somebody could throw a bit more light on this subject. What, you know, what is the nature of that illusion that is so substantial? Archdeep Prabhu.
Depends on how inclusive you want to be. I mean, in one sense, this entire material creation is called illusory. It's called the illusory energy of the Lord. And so we know when we preach, somebody will say, what illusion? I don't have a job, I'm starving. I mean, well, how can you say this is illusion? You know, yes, it's illusion because it's temporary. It has a beginning and an end. It's not an illusion in the sense of something that's not real. It is real, but it's temporary. And we are eternal, and therefore it's called illusory. It's like being in a dream. In a dream, the tiger seems very real to you, but the dream has a beginning and an end. And when you wake up, there is no tiger. So when you wake up spiritually, there is no material influence on the spirit soul. No matter what's going on the bodily plane, the soul is not being affected. The soul is not being cut or dried or withered by the wind or anything like that. And so in that sense, it's an illusion. The entire package is an illusion. So the demons obviously have the ability, not only the demons, the devotees also have this ability, Arjuna and others. They could create mountain weapons, and you counteract a mountain weapon with some other kind of weapon, with a thunderbolt weapon. And so they can create these things. So you can say in one sense an illusion. At one moment there was no mountain there. And all of a sudden by mantra, the warrior creates a mountain. So you can say it's an illusion, but it's real. If it falls on your head breaks. Right. So it's real in that sense. But the entire material energy is like that. In one sense, one moment it's not there. Periodically the entire Mahatattva appears, and then all these activities go on. And then again it disappears. I like to use the example, especially for students when I'm preaching, that if you come out of your home one day, there was an empty field on your block, and all of a sudden a construction crew comes and they build a house, and then by the time you come home in the evening, the house is gone. So was the house real or was it not real? It was real while it lasted. They actually constructed a house, some demonstration project, but then they tear it down, and now it's an empty field again. Mm-hmm. So somebody could say, well, the whole thing was illusion. There is no house there. There was no house when I left this morning. There's no house when I came back tonight. But in the interim, there was a house. They actually constructed a house. It was very real. Wood, bricks, stones, everything was there. So the entire material world is like that. At some point in time, there's nothing. Then Krishna creates the whole material cloud in the spiritual sky. And all these activities go on for some time, and then they disappear.
Hi, thank you. Does anybody want to add anything to this particular point? And otherwise, I'll take another question. Judah Carmi?
Yeah, I just... first of all, I just wanted to say that that's the explanation that Archita gave, in my own opinion, is perfectly, really right on, and it's a really clear understanding of what this illusory energy truly means. Basically, it's the material energy. That's the illusory energy. And material energy can be used, as it's being used in these circumstances, by the demons to create different types of substances and create creatures that can be harmful, and which they are harmful, and which they are affecting and afflicting the demigods. So that's exactly it. It's not that they're unreal and that these snakes are coming down, but they're really no snakes. That's not the idea. The idea is that Archita, as you made, they are very real snakes, but they are temporary snakes. I just wanted to simply confirm that his explanation is really very clear and very useful for all of us. At least that's my opinion. But what I wanted to add to the point that you had made in bringing out the other purport, you know, from the Dhruva Maharaj's story, I was just a little bit hopeful that you would tie it together but the situation which is going on now, where the demons and the devotees are fighting one another, and the devotees are being worsted, and they are in their heart of hearts, of course, crying out and calling for the Supreme Lord. And then what does happen is Lord Vishnu, he does come, and he does use his powers, and he destroys and literally kills the demons, including Bali Maharaj. And, of course, they do have Shukracharya, who does have his particular weapon, if you want to call it a weapon, or actually a mantra, in which he revives all the demons back to their life. But in effect, what happens is that the demigods do triumph. They are victorious as a result of their dependence upon Lord Vishnu. That's how what we were talking about. That's how it finally comes to an end.
Right, Krishna rescues him.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. I was just wondering, how is it that after they got the nectar of immortality, that now they have fear of the demigods to be killed? And number two is the translation said in the purport, was it the demigod soldiers or the demigods being soldiers that were being killed? In the translation of the verses.
Okay. Question one. Apparently the nectar isn't as good as it's advertised to be. Dravida mentioned that in when he gave class here, that, you know, the idea was that you drink the nectar and that's it, you're immortal, but the demigods are getting killed, so it's not what it's cracked up to be. And it's something in the Krishna book too, where I can't remember which pastime it is, but it's, I think it was something with Agasura about how the demigods, they were drinking nectar every day, but they weren't confident of their immortality. Apparently it doesn't really work. It doesn't make you immortal. Okay, and as far as both the demigods and their soldiers were being killed, because if we were to read on in this chapter, it actually mentions that, very briefly, just a brief mention, but it sounds like even Indra and Chandra got killed by these mystic powers of the demons, and they were brought back to life by Lord Vishnu. So it was both the demigods and their soldiers who were being killed. Anybody else burning to ask a question or make a comment? Otherwise, we'll end there. Okay. Thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.